Pregnancy and the birth of a child can be among the happiest times in a woman's life, but for a substantial number of them, these events can bring on depression and anxiety. On today's edition of Please Explain, we're looking at postpartum depression and at the field of perinatal psychiatry, which treats mood disorders during and after pregnancy. Dr. Sherry Luskin, Director of Reproductive Psychiatry at NYU Langone Medical Center and Mount Sinai Medical Center, joins us now, along with Dr. Catherine Monk Irving, Assistant Professor of Clinical Psychology at Columbia University Medical Center. It's a pleasure to welcome you to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Catherine, what differentiates postpartum depression from just feeling tired and overwhelmed with caring for a newborn?
That's an excellent question. And it really is on a continuum. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that even if the experience is not as dramatic as we might need to give a diagnosis of depression, there still can be a need to get some support and get some help. So I really want to make that first point. But when we really think about postpartum depression and what gets a person to fall into that category, we think about the length of the mood disturbance. So we think about at least 2 weeks. That there's a hopelessness and a depressed mood and or a really lack of pleasure in experiences.
And so, does this occur almost immediately after the child is born?
Not necessarily at all. And in fact, the peak incidence is about 3 months, although it can technically be diagnosed out to a year and still be related to the birth of the child and get called postpartum depression.
How common is it?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'm sure Dr. Luskin and I can weigh in on this on and on. The rates say between 15 and 20%. And
that's high.
It's high.
That's one in five women.
It can be very high, and I just want to point out that when we think about gestational diabetes, other medical illnesses associated with, you know, that happen during the pregnancy period and shortly after, that's 3 to 4%, much higher rate than preterm birth, which is 12.5%. On the other hand, there was recently a paper out called Pathologizing Motherhood. And one of the concerns in the paper was, are we basing this rate on a lot of self-report studies where women are troubled and they could really benefit from some intervention, but they may not have a frank postpartum depression.
Sherry, do we have any idea what causes postpartum depression? Is it likely that the woman has had experience with depression before?
That is a major risk factor for postpartum depression. So what really causes depression, we don't know. It's some sort of interaction between your biological vulnerability based on your genes, based on your environment, and then the hormonal shifts that occur following the birth of a baby.
What would happen hormonally?
Well, hormonally, you have, remember, during the pregnancy, you have very high levels of estrogen and progesterone, and they plummet after the delivery. But there's another factor that affects all women who deliver, and that's sleep deprivation.
Yes.
So if they have sleep deprivation during labor and delivery, you know, one of those 36-hour labors, they're not in good shape when they actually have the baby. And if you have sleep deprivation postpartum, caring for the newborn, that is the root of all evils.
But I'm curious about the hormonal aspects, because it seems to me that a woman is flooded with female hormones and then she's less flooded with them. When women get male hormones, when they have a high dosage of testosterone, they get depressed almost immediately.
Well, I think they get more aggressive when they have a lot of testosterone. Estrogen is a good chemical, but sometimes it causes depression too. And progesterone definitely causes depression. So, you know, it ain't easy being a woman. You know, you get the good news and the bad news. The relationship between hormones and postpartum depression, though, is very unclear. For example, men do get postpartum depression, and clearly they don't have big shifts in estrogen and progesterone. So there's some combination of environmental factors and biological factors that occur to bring about this whole system.
Well, you mentioned sleeplessness. Should I assume that that's why men get it as well? You suddenly have this child who is getting you up at all hours. Sleeplessness can cause all sorts of problems
in
people.
Absolutely. And what's happening to both these parents is the dramatic change in their experience of themselves, how their time is allocated, what kind of time they have together. And I think speaking, you know, particularly psychologically, this is a time when we're thinking about our attachments and our hopes for what they're going to be like, what they were in the past. So that can be another trigger point for people, for both men and women.
Sherry, do you have any recommendations for enabling people who have to get up in the middle of the night to feed a baby to get more sleep?
I always recommend they get more sleep. If it's possible to have a relative or a friend or a professional like a baby nurse help you take care of the baby, it's a really good way to reduce your risk of postpartum depression. If I see somebody during the pregnancy who I know is at high risk for having a postpartum depression, that becomes an essential part of the management plan.
Does returning to a normal schedule, like going back to work after maternity leave, help alleviate the depression?
Well, for some people, it really does. You know, interestingly, in Canada, you get a year's maternity leave, and that's a great thing for somebody who enjoys being home with the baby. But a lot of women...
Don't tell Congress that.
A lot of women that I've spoken to as I've done some work in Canada, a lot of them find that it's very lonely and isolating, and they can't wait to get back to work, but they can't get back to work because somebody else has taken their job for a year. So there's some women who feel better when they go back to work. There's some women who get depressed because they're going back to work, and they won't have time to spend with their baby. It's very much an individual factor.
Mm-hmm. My guests are Dr. Shari Luskin, Director of Reproductive Psychiatry at NYU Langone Medical Center and Mount Sinai Medical Center, and Dr. Catherine Monk Irving, Assistant Professor of Clinical Psychology at Columbia University Medical Center. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. In a little while, we'll be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Catherine, many women who experience postpartum depression will talk about being surprised by it. Why is it unexpected?
Well, I think there's such a cultural expectation, as you initially said in the opening, about it being a really pleasurable time in life, and most couples have really looked forward to having this child together, and now the child is there.
And some women will tell you that they felt flooded with all sorts of things, I guess that's hormonal as well, that made them feel really great. Mm-hmm. Others don't seem to have that experience, but the great majority of women will tell you that this is a period where their bodies just feel wonderful.
I don't know if their body feels wonderful postpartum, but their head may feel wonderful.
They have some moments, right?
It feels good about things.
Right. You know, it's a little-known fact that elation postpartum, 2 days postpartum, is actually a predictor of postpartum depression. It's 6 weeks postpartum.
So if you feel elated first, you're likely
you
to feel
depressed. You may crash later. So you want to feel good, but not too high.
But I think, there is this oxytocin and this bonding hormone, which is another, you know, biological factor going on. And for most people, for men and women, but particularly women, that gets initiated through the feeding process. And it's part of the birth process. So.
And oxytocin is a natural
bonding, trusting
in the body.
Yes,
bonding
hormone.
Beyond Tom Cruise, is there still a stigma associated with postpartum depression?
Yes,
sure. I mean, as there is about any mental health issue in our country.
Well, but I would think by now most people have heard of it. Are they still being told? Women still being told? This is just in your head. You'll get past it. It's okay.
Yes,
sure.
Let me explain. 10 years ago, actually it's now almost 15 years ago that I started specializing in this field, we had very few people who would admit that they actually had a postpartum depression. Thanks to the efforts of celebrities like Brooke Shields, postpartum depression has become a topic of conversation, and people are a little more willing to talk about it than they were then. But there's still a tremendous stigma. People, we have a prejudice against mental health treatment and mental illness. In certain communities, for example, in the Asian community, it's really taboo to have a mental illness. So postpartum depression falls under that rubric, and these women suffer in silence and don't get treated.
Well, how is it usually treated?
Well, the postpartum depression should be treated like any other depression. The difference is you have to consider the impact of treatment on the infant and on the family system as well, so that raises the stakes a little bit. For somebody who has mild depression with a lot of psychosocial stressors, just addressing those using cognitive behavioral therapy or interpersonal psychotherapy can be very effective at improving their mood. For somebody with more severe symptoms, particularly somebody who has suicidal thinking, profound hopelessness, helplessness.
Are we talking before the pregnancy or
sometimes?
Well, I'm just talking about postpartum depression now, but the general way you approach the issue is really pretty similar in pregnancy too. So for somebody with more severe symptoms, therapy may not be enough, and they may need medication.
Does this ever turn into chronic depression?
It does. And Catherine mentioned earlier that you can diagnose postpartum depression up to 1 year of age. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes we see patients who walk in with a three-year-old. They had a postpartum depression. It never got better. So they still have a postpartum depression, even though the child is older.
Catherine, is postpartum depression more common with a first child, or does it really matter?
That's a very good question. I don't think that the research is quite in yet on that. It certainly can be more of a stressor having a first child. You're less experienced. Could I go back to something before, though, just about what the treatment is? And I think that really wanting to emphasize that there can be adjustment problems having a baby, and that can be a time to go into therapy. And even if it's not a frank depression, that can really be an excellent time to get support, because it is, as Shara just said, not only the woman, but she now has a family. So how she's feeling is going to dramatically affect how the child does. And there are other kinds of therapies, not only IPT and CBT, but ones that are more exploratory and looking at the relationships between mother and child that are also effective.
Now we're talking about depression. What about anxiety?
Mm-hmm. They often go together. They are highly, highly correlated. So you most often have some anxiety symptoms when you have a depression.
I've been on the lecture circuit recently talking about anxiety mm-hmm. disorders. You know, anxiety made the cover of the New York Times magazine section in October. So it's the hot topic of this year. Way back when, there was postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, and postpartum blues.
Now, what is postpartum psychosis?
Well, postpartum psychosis is a really severe, dramatic mental illness that occurs usually within a month of the delivery. And when you asked about whether having your first baby was a risk factor for having postpartum depression, it's actually a risk factor for having a severe postpartum depression or a postpartum psychosis, and it's the most vulnerable time in a woman's life for having a psychiatric hospitalization. But the incidence of the milder postpartum depression, variable. You could have one or two babies and be fine, and the third one's the kicker, or the fifth one's the kicker.
But if you've had postpartum depression with one,
you're at risk. It's easily a 50% risk. Mm-hmm. So when you get back to anxiety, so we had these three diagnoses. Well, now we know there's antenatal depression. Now we know there's a bipolar disorder in pregnancy and postpartum. And then the next diagnostic category is the anxiety disorders. So we're starting to make those diagnoses in conjunction with each other as we refine our understanding of the whole system.
Catherine, wasn't there a time when women with a history of depression and bipolar disorder would have been advised not to have children?
Certainly, absolutely.
And many of those people are on medication. So right. What happens when they become pregnant? There's a fetus who's going to be getting antidepressants.
That's right. And I'm going to answer this partially and also turn it over to Shari, because I'm not the kind of doctor who prescribes, but I do do research actually on the fetus and how the fetus gets potentially affected by women's stress or anxiety and by medications. And this is an active area of both research in animal models and in humans in terms of how might the fetus be affected by exposure to meds that women need. And there was just a joint paper that came out from the obstetric group and also from the psychiatric group, really helping clinicians work through a risk-benefit analysis of looking at women's individual depression. How severe is it? Does she need to stay on the meds during pregnancy? Could she be weaned off and go right back on once the baby's born? And these are really individual decisions to be made with the woman, the patient, maybe her partner. And the doctor. And I really want to emphasize something else, that these questions of medication, particularly during pregnancy, which I'm sure has more to say on, should really be made in consult with a psychiatrist. I, as a psychologist, can make a referral. This is a significant depression. This may need a psychiatrist. But so often it happens with the OBs or the primary care doctors are putting pregnant women on these medications, and I don't think going through the really careful risk-benefit analysis.
Well, I'm sure that somebody who's bipolar, who can only be kept on an even keel by medications, mm-hmm. has to look at the trade-off between mm-hmm. Keeping herself going and worrying about what the impact is going to be on the baby.
Mm-hmm. My guiding principle and what I try to teach other physicians is that a healthy mother makes for a healthy baby. Hands down. And if the mother is healthy, then she can handle what she needs to handle if the baby's not healthy. Mm-hmm. The risks of medication, generally speaking, which we don't know a lot about, are, I think, outweighed by by the known risks of the untreated illness. Now, it's very obvious in somebody who has classic manic depressive illness or bipolar disorder. If the mother is manic, not sleeping, traveling all over, doing something really, really dangerous, she puts both of them at risk. It's less obvious with depression, especially in the patient who's mildly to moderately depressed. It's the bottom line is there's no such thing as non-exposure. The baby is going to be exposed to something, and what we're really trying to study now is the risks of untreated maternal illness as well.
But there are all sorts of things that are going on in the body while you're pregnant.
Yes.
I suspect that in some cases it can function as a curative. In other cases, I knew a woman who, I think with her second child, suddenly had developed this other illness, and I've forgotten the name of it, where she lost her hair. And that remained a condition she lived with for the rest of her life. And it was all because, I guess, of...
Oh, you mean she lost her hair because of stress?
No.
Or you're just saying she had a dermatologic problem and lost her hair?
I can't remember the name of the illness, but it's not an uncommon thing where suddenly you...
Alopecia.
Yeah, alopecia. Yeah. She developed alopecia.
Well, yes, everything changes. And, you know, the good news, bad news, if somebody is stable on medications, let's say, just leave out bipolar for a moment, just stable for depression on medicine, and they continue those medications during the pregnancy, unfortunately, it's not 100% guarantee they won't relapse because pregnancy changes everything. So you still, if you are on medication and doing well, it's really important to be closely monitored during the pregnancy as well.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guests are Dr. Shari Luskin of the NYU Langone Medical Center and Mount Sinai Medical Center, and Dr. Catherine Monk of the Columbia University Medical Center. Again, the number 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with Drs. Catherine Monk of Columbia University Medical Center and Dr. Shari Luskin of the NYU Langone Medical Center and Mount Sinai Medical Center. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Before we get to the calls, just one other question. Some childbirths are more difficult than others. They can be rather painful.
Yes.
Some seem to be rather easy. Is there any corollary between the two?
Very variable. Yeah. Very variable. Personally, if I hadn't had an epidural, I don't know what would have happened. But, you know, there's nothing natural about natural childbirth. As far as I'm concerned, it's great for the one who wants it. But for some patients, they're surprised by the amount of pain. They're devastated. They're traumatized. They develop a post-traumatic stress disorder around childbirth. So it depends.
And particularly, if it's a really complicated birth or there's some complication in terms of the child, in terms of the outcome, that can be somewhat of a risk factor in terms of medical complications. But I think it is very variable.
Let's take some calls. Robert from Rockland County, New Jersey. Robert, I understand that you had a very difficult childbirth.
No, not at all. But my wife has had three children, and she never seemed to experience much in the way of depression after all three of them. But she nursed each of our children for about a year. We've had other friends that went back to work very quickly and decided not to breastfeed, and some of them had rather severe depression, and I'm wondering if there's any correlation.
Between breastfeeding and postpartum and depression.
Right. This is another risk factor that's been looked at, but the results are equivocal. So some women stop breastfeeding because they're depressed. Other women find breastfeeding is the only thing that connects them to the baby when they're depressed. They get depressed when they have to stop breastfeeding, and then there are women where there doesn't seem to be any relationship to the breastfeeding.
It's also very hard to study because there's a self-selection bias, as is being alluded to, in terms of who does or doesn't breastfeed, and that may actually be a marker for someone already experiencing some depression that they might decide to not breastfeed.
It's always interesting when I get to treat somebody through two pregnancies to see the difference in the experience when they've been treated versus when they first came to treatment. So usually it's a much better experience the second time around. And they will often say, I didn't breastfeed because I was depressed and now I can, or I made a different choice because I'm feeling better.
Are medications safe to take while you're breastfeeding?
For the most part.
Well, you know, Catherine is actually actively studying the effects of antidepressants in utero. Mm-hmm. There's a large body of literature on the effects of antidepressants postnatally as well through the breastfeeding.
Do the babies come out blissed out?
I don't want to interrupt, but that's been the assumption, and an animal model is not quite turning out, but yeah. Maybe we'll go there in a minute.
You know, we wonder if by exposing the developing brain, either through pregnancy or during breastfeeding, you're probably doing something to the developing brain of the baby. We wonder if we're actually practicing primary prevention and in some way modifying that brain so that the baby is less likely to develop depression his or herself. Because if you have one depressed parent, you're at a higher risk for getting depressed as an adult. So maybe we are modifying them in a positive way. But like in any adult who's taking medication, there are side effects. So we don't want the babies to have any side effects, and side effects aren't necessarily toxic effects. But that's the kind of research Catherine's doing to tease apart how individual babies actually respond to exposure to small doses of medication. So in answer to your question, yes, there are medications you can take while breastfeeding.
So one listener wondered whether the fact that oxytocin and prolactin are released during breastfeeding would help offset or alleviate postpartum depression.
I don't think it's a cure for postpartum depression, but it's a factor. And we certainly see the course of depression changes in some women when they breastfeed or when they stop breastfeeding. But what the relationship is hard to say.
It's still being studied. Yeah.
And we go now to Jessica from Manhattan. Hi, Jessica. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am a social worker in New York, and I facilitate new mom support groups all over the city. Mm-hmm. But I also get a lot of emails and a lot of calls from women who are clearly suffering with postpartum depression or anxiety, and are afraid to get the help that they need and deserve because they're afraid their babies will be taken away from mm-hmm. them or their children will be taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what I do is kind of supporting them via phone call to reach out for the help that they need to get through this. But I don't know what I can say or what can be put in place to safeguard any of these, this situation from children being taken away. What resources or support systems?
You're bringing up two interesting points. One is that women still feel stigmatized mm-hmm. if they have depression postpartum, so they're afraid to reach out for help. Mm-hmm. The second point you're bringing up, perhaps without realizing it, is that fear that somebody will take away the baby. I mean, you brought up that they'll take away the baby, but that fear is driven by a very common symptom in postpartum depression, and that's obsessive ruminations. These are illogical, intrusive thoughts that the woman might accidentally harm the baby. A woman who is psychotic doesn't recognize her thoughts as being illogical. That woman with a postpartum psychosis is at risk for harming the baby. The 40% of postpartum depression women who have obsessive thoughts are not really at risk of harming the baby unless they neglected the baby. So what I would suggest is that you ask the patient what types of thoughts they're having about the baby. If they have these intrusive, disturbing thoughts, they should seek professional attention, but explain to the doctor or the social worker or the nurse practitioner that they're not actually intending to harm the baby. And in that case, they can get support, get treatment, get better, and these thoughts will go away.
And just to really emphasize, I think what you're hearing from people is the stigma, and there are subcultures in which that's even a stronger stigma, and we really need to work against that. And there are some research studies out where interventions have been used with women who are depressed postpartum or in pregnancy that call them counselors or coaches or support. So I think even our language, and this is why I keep on emphasizing the continuum of difficulties that women can be having, so it doesn't have to be, frankly, a postpartum depression. It can be distress. And getting support is what they need, and they can do this for their children.
Let's go to another call. Chris from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm actually
calling because it's really pre-pregnancy. I'm going through fertility, and for the last year and a half, I've been doing that. And so they put estrogen and progesterone in you, and it has caused me to feel depression and to feel anxiety about it. And they're recommending that I take antidepressants during the process. But obviously, I'm very ambivalent about this, and I just wanted your thoughts.
My thoughts are that I see a lot of women like this in my practice, and I'm sure you're having very difficult times, but I think it sounds as if, given your caution, and I don't know if you have a history of depression or not, but it's quite likely that these experiences could be managed through some therapy and some support, particularly given the cognitive intervention that you know that some of this is coming from the alterations in your hormones and that are relatively short-lived. And this can also, get you then in care with a mental health professional who then could be mindful or could make a referral if you need an evaluation. But this probably can be managed without medication unless you have a significant, some history of depression.
I think, and I take into consideration that we don't know what can happen to the fetus if I do conceive while antidepressant, so I'm probably putting myself somewhat at risk.
You're giving me an opportunity to say that we don't know. There's ongoing research in humans, and that the whatever negative outcomes, which are minimal, seem to be still very rare. But there are animal studies that are suggesting that we really need to look closely at this, because rather than having a very happy mouse that's exposed in utero and coming out very happy, folks at Columbia are seeing the opposite. So we don't know. We don't know if that's going to translate to the humans. But if it's not a case where there's a significant depression, the risk-benefit analysis of medication needs to be weighed.
Carolyn in Manhattan asks, if a close relative has postpartum depression, are you more likely to get it?
If it's a first-degree relative, mm-hmm. like a sister or a mother, then that increases your risk. Mm-hmm. A family history of depression definitely increases your own risk of depression, but the closer the relative is, the higher the risk.
Pat from, where is it?
New Jersey.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think I have what I wanted to state was I did have a severe postpartum depression after my second child. Of course, that was about 40 years ago, and not really understanding it, and never went for treatment, but it lasted an entire year. But I have suffered from many serious major depressions since. But in I've had subsequent pregnancies, and the one after that went wonderful, and the postpartum was wonderful, mm-hmm. and then I didn't get pregnant for 7 years, and then that pregnancy and birth was wonderful, and unexpectedly, that we didn't plan this, but I got pregnant again, and I was severely depressed during my pregnancy, but the doctor kept me on the medicine. Now, I must say this was a well-known, very good psychiatrist, and he, along with my obstetrician, monitored that. Mm-hmm. But it was the severity of the depression mm-hmm. that he kept me on the antidepressant, and then afterwards. So I want to just say that it's not always bad for the fetus. The child
sure.
was fine,
mm-hmm.
and, I don't know how I would have survived without mm-hmm. the medication.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 30 years ago, and I'm still on medication.
Sorry.
The important thing during pregnancy, when you've made the decision that medication is still necessary, which for many women like yourself, it certainly is, the important thing is to be treated to remission. Meaning, if you're on the medicine and you're still feeling severely depressed, the dose needs to be adjusted. Very often that dose has to be increased during pregnancy, because metabolism of the drug changes during pregnancy, plus you have all those other factors from hormones and the psychosocial stress that can influence the course. So staying on the medication and keeping the mom well is definitely a good thing, but always, always, always be treated to remission.
Thank you for your call. James from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering, men and women evolved together over, millions of years, and you were talking about men getting postpartum depression, and I know that when you're in love and you have a long-term relationship, that has its own hormonal cycle involving oxytocin and everything as well. I was wondering if anybody had even asked the question of what the significance of fathers to postpartum depression was.
Do you mean to fathers in terms of women's postpartum depression?
Having them around,
yeah.
Just having a guy around
there's
involved and, being in a relationship and things like like that.
There's no doubt that partners are significant social buffers when it's a relationship that's going well, and that's true during pregnancy and postpartum. So the opposite is true. If it's a really troubled relationship, it can be a significant stressor which can contribute to a depression.
Now, when you talk about men getting postpartum depression, is it likely that the woman has gotten it first, or can they just get it on their own while the mother is perfectly happy?
You can see both. I think women with a history of depression often marry or partner with men who have a history of depression, just the same for anxiety disorders. So there's a common ground emotionally that they share. So no surprise that the husband might be vulnerable to depression himself. And the I usually, if I see that the father's depressed, usually the mother is also depressed. And in fact, what happens is when a patient comes in to see me, I try to meet with the partner whenever possible, because sometimes the partner is worse off than the patient. The psychosocial stress of having a baby and the changes that go mm-hmm. along with that can take somebody who was a carefree, happy-go-lucky person, all of a sudden he has to take care of this little baby. So it can really throw them for a loop.
And the change in the relationship in terms of the couple's time for each other and for work.
We go now to Caroline from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Actually, my comments kind of relate to what you were just saying about men who suffer from postpartum related to adoptive mothers. I'm an adoptive mother mm-hmm. and went through, those same kind of feelings of hopelessness. My schedule changed. My whole mm-hmm. life changed. And can I really do this? What did I get myself into? And, I had read an article about postpartum with, for adoptive parents. And
I have to speed you up. I have very few seconds. Is it likely with adoptive parents as well?
Sure. Definitely. Uh-huh.
Major life change.
And what about another listener wanted to know if you have multiple births, if you have twins or triplets?
Extra demands, huge stressor.
Very, very hard, lots of stressors.
Yeah. So any kind of stressors are going to make this more likely.
In people who are vulnerable, it can be a contributing factor.
Yeah, life stress.
I want to thank the two of you so much for being on today's Please Explain. I've been talking with Dr. Catherine Monk, Irving Assistant Professor of Clinical Psychology at Columbia University Medical Center, and with Dr. Shari Luskin, Director of Reproductive Psychiatry at NYU Langone Medical Center and Mount Sinai Medical Center. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. And
thank you.
Thank you all
thank
of you,
you
who have called in.
Us.
And sorry I couldn't get to the rest of you.